Hi everybody, it's Will Alexander from Will Alexander's Dog Show Tips, brought to you by Canine Chronicle TV. This week on the interview chair we have the one and only, because there's only one, Mr. Doug Holloway. Well, good afternoon everybody. We have a special guest today in the interview chair. We have none other than Mr. Douglas R. Holloway. Hello, Dougie.
Hello, William. How are you?
I'm good. It's good to see you.
You noticed I called you by your correct name, right? Oh, good. It's good seeing you, buddy. I'm glad.
Really good to see you. And things are good. How's Rita?
Rita's fine. She's out on the porch reading, She goes through about two or three books a week, so I'm not a reader. I'd rather listen to audiobooks and, go from there,
Well, let's get right to it then. Let's start off at the very beginning. How did you get, we all understand you were born into it, but you explain it to us. How did you get involved in the sport?
I literally was, like you said, I was born into it. I scooped for as long as you want to say, up until, and scooped, wash runs, cages, wash dogs, you name it, wash the truck all through my youth. At one time, in the early years of anybody's life, trucks weren't around. They either had a station wagon or a flatbed truck, and I can remember when I was a kid going to Chicago, everybody would put all the dogs in the back of a flatbed truck, off to the train station they'd go.
Wow.
James, Bob, Howard Tyler, Steve Shaw. it was just, and to the down to Penn Station, there we'd go, and they would get a train, they get on the train, put all the dogs in the cargo part of it, which Mr. Foley would have all the straw and everything, so you could, while you were traveling out to Chicago, they go in and exercise their dogs and on a leash and then put them back in their boxes. And it was great. I was running around like a goddamn banshee, it's what I was. I was just a young kid, my mother, Emma, and very few people would know her. Bobby Fisher would know her, Elliot, Elsie, Michael Posseret, Peter Green, they all know my mother. George would know her, Alston, and Marianne. But she bred Kerry Blue Terriers. That's how I got involved into Kerry Blue Terriers. It's and Golden Retrievers. That was her kennel name was Blue and Gold, and but those were the first two breeds that I was involved in, and Dad did a lot of private breeding for big breeders. Suzanne Bellinger was pugs and Irish wolfhounds. Showed for her for until she married Joe Rowe, and then he got rid of the Irish wolfhounds and then continued with pugs. Mrs. Bajney, Bedlington Terriers. In fact, Cliffy Steele, I believe, bought her kennel. He didn't buy it from her, but that's the kennel that Mrs. Bajney had, Bedlington Terriers. Dad showed for her. Mrs. Earl, probably one of the most classiest women this dog game has ever seen. She had Skye Terriers. Dad showed for her for years, up until Jim Clark, Annie's husband, became a private handler for her. I can remember going to dog shows. It was it was the funniest thing because my favorite person was Walter. You know, Walter Goodman was, again, you get into being a gentleman. I mean, Walter was as classy a gentleman, again, this dog game has ever seen. And I just couldn't wait to sit on top of his crates and watch him brush his dog and do whatever. And Mrs. Earl would say to Dad, "Roy, Dougie's a traitor." You know, it's just, but Mrs. Earl quit showing dogs because Walter started throwing the big parties in New York. And she wouldn't compete that way. You know, she did it for years and years. And she just, it came to an end when she felt that if that's how you had to win, she wouldn't do it. And the dog game lost an incredible person. I'm trying to think on who would know her in today's life. Desi would probably know her. Pete would. And but she was really, really an incredible person. I don't know how many acres she owned in Ridgefield, Connecticut. She, when miniature horses, when nobody knew what miniature horses, she had them. You know, and she basically had her own little forest out back. She had bears, she had deer all coming through the woods at all times, you know. But it was, you know, that's when there was big time breeders, you know. Everybody, you know, that was involved in dogs back in those days showed for a breeder, basically. It's not. Today, it's a completely different story on breeding dogs. It's not that there isn't good people out there breeding dogs. It's just, it's a different game. The money is not there to finance a breeding kennel, which...
And the numbers are, you know, they just don't have those numbers anymore, so...
No, it's... Yeah, it's, you know, you just don't. It's... It's a shame because we all grew up thinking that the dog game was going to continue the same way it was as we, and you, myself, we've all watched the dog game change, and it's called progress. It's more of a money operation for the big organization itself. It's not about the education doing the breeding part of it. It's not there, you know. And not that there isn't incredible breeders. I mean, you have, there is some, you know, you have Sandra Campbell and Bassett. She's not breeding as many Bassett's as she used to, but she was an incredible breeder. Yeah, you have the gal from up in New Hampshire that Brian showed for. She is an incredible Bassett. But I don't think she's breeding anymore. So it's the, you know, there's a few people out there. Bloodhound breeders are becoming far and few between. You know, the Mrs. Lindsay's are no longer. She bred Bassett's and Bloodhounds. I mean, so, you know, those people are coming far and few between. I talked to Marianne the other day, and she was going over to create a litter of Irish Setter puppies. And I said, who in the world wants to breed Irish Setter puppies in today's society? I mean, they have more energy than you can shake a stick at. I mean, they never stop. You know, they got more angles, so their legs don't know which way they're cotton picking going. They're all going all over the goddarn place. And but you can only keep your fingers crossed if there's a good one in the litter that she graded, you know. So it's and there's, again, there's Marianne, I mean, she, you know, she retired from judging, which is a loss. I mean, she was a great person. She's a great, great dog woman, you know, and her husband, George. I listened to George's interview the other day, and I told you the other day, I said, that son of a gun could go back hours, and I wish he did. I mean, he should have. He and I grew up in this goddamn game from the time being our youths. I mean, we were born into it, basically. He was just a kid when he started, but he could have gone back that far. You know, he went a little bit back into his junior showmanship and so on like that. But he could have done a whole history in the dog game, you know, and that's what it's about, is the history of the dog game. It's there.
When did you first start showing dogs then, Dougie? Like, yeah, I hear about all the labor you did. When did you start showing?
I took a sabbatical. I became, I traveled around the country doing my own little thing. And, so I, you know, when you think about when I came back into it, I got drafted, I guess, when I was 18 and had an incident which kept me out of the army. So, hung out for a while, waiting to go to get redrafted, and went to work for Dad again, scooping and washing crates, washing the truck. And he finally found out that they weren't going to draft me because of the incidents that I had had. And he said, "That's it." He says, "You're no more in the kennel." He says, "You're going." He says, "You're going to shows." So off I went. And so I had to become about 20. And isn't it that I didn't go to dog shows all the time? It's just that I never went to work at dog shows. I mean, I would go and exercise the dogs while he was at the truck and stuff like that. I just, when in my younger youth, I was a ring runner. I mean, Mr. Foley would say to him, "Roy, where's Doug?" And George was the same thing. He was a ring runner. And Dad'd say, "Oh, he's with the Foley boys parking cars and unloading crates." And he says, "Well, I need him to run rings." So I ran rings all day long. And you get a buck a day, you know, maybe a buck a day. It would be.
Describe running rings for us.
Running rings. I mean, you have to understand something. It was only, dog shows were only 300, tops 300 dog shows back in the day. You had Bob, Jane, and they weren't together then. Okay, so you had Bob, Jane, Cliffy. I'm just going to give you a few names. Yeah. Cliffy Hallmark, Bob and Jane, and my father, Bill Trainer. And you would go up to the ring, find out what breed was coming up or what class was coming in. And whatever the steward was or the George, you know, or the judge would say, "Dougie, tell Cliffy I need him in the ring." So I run back to Cliffy's setup, and all dog shows were benched. There was not a bench. Everything was benched. So I'd run back to Cliffy's setup, you know, and I'd say, "Cliffy, he needs you in the ring now." Cliffy would say, "Tell him to go to the bathroom." I'd go back to the ring, and I'd say, "Cliffy says go to the bathroom." So sure enough, he'd go to the bathroom. And by the time he came back, Cliffy was there. You know, same thing with Bob. You know, you go to English Setters, and they'd say, "We need Robert now." And I'd go running back to the setup, and he wouldn't be there. He'd be in another ring. So I'd go to that ring, and I'd say, "Robert, they need the English Setter on the ring. Tell him to go to the bathroom." So I go back to the ring and say, "Bob says, go to the bathroom." You know, and that was running rings, and that happened all the time. And Mr. Foley, who every day I was at a dog show, Mr. Foley would come to the crates and say, "Roy, is Dougie with you?" And Dad say, "Yep, he's over there unloading crates with the Foley boys." And sure enough, Mr. Foley would walk over. He always had his little beanie on, you know, and he'd say, "Doug, please." And I was getting this Packard, and off to church we'd go. Every day of his life, he went to church. And if I was at a dog show and Mr. Foley was there, I went to church. It was just, it was one of those things. He'd come over and say, all right, off we go to church. And I wasn't Catholic, but off to a Catholic church we'd go. And so, I mean, I knew basically, I automatically knew when I was going to a show with the Foley boys, I mean, Mr. Foley, I'd be going to church. And which I enjoyed. You know, you had more respect for Mr. Foley in this business than anybody else. And everybody respected Mr. Foley.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't a person alive that when he was running MBF, the Foley dog shows, when he was running it, everybody respected Mr. Foley. He was just an incredible, incredible person, you know, and gave you a great education on how the dog game should be run. And then things changed, you know, he sold it out and MBF became his partner. And then finally he got out of it and MBF took complete control. And they worked at a Philadelphia for I don't know how many years. But it's a history that it's a shame that Forsyth and Dad and Ward or Billy Kendrick didn't write all this stuff down, because they had great stories. You know, the education that they could give to today's society was incredible. It's too bad they just didn't write it all down for them. You know, but I started showing dogs, I guess. Before I decided to go party around the country a little bit, I was with Dad and showed a couple of dogs and for him, just become an assistant. Then I said, I'm going to party around the country, which I did for a while. Then I came back, and sure enough, I went to Greenskeeper School. I was going to go into Rutgers. And then I changed my mind, and I said, you know what? The dog game is what I want to do. So I ended up working for Dad for, I don't know. Actually, I went to work for Bob and Jane again. I was working there before I went around the countryside, and then I came back and worked for them. And went to work for Dad, and then I went to work for Mrs. Clark, and Barton was the kennel manager at the time, and, you know, 50 Labradors and whatever Newfoundlands or Goldens was flying around the goddamn place, and she also had horses, you know, she had a 1,400 to a 1,500 acre farm.
Which Mrs. Clark are we talking about?
Mrs. R.D. Clark, Liz Clark. And Annie, I never called Annie Mrs. Clark. I just always said Annie. And, but I went to work for her in the, privately for a few years. And then I went to work for George and Marianne. And probably the smartest move I ever made in my life. He just was a great teacher, great person. Marianne is an adorable, adorable person that you have to love. An intelligent. Both have great minds, dog minds, you know. It was when they retired, they lost an heir, and they really did.
How old were you when you first started working for George and Marianne?
Piece of daylights out of me. I don't know, buddy. Let's see. I went on my own in... let's see, when did I go on my own? 76, I guess it was. So I worked for George probably, I went to work for Jordan in probably about 74. You know, so I worked a couple of years for George. Had great times. Really enjoyed myself. George got me a job working as it was a partnership. For a guy called Thomas Weil. Laddie Carswell is the one that Laddie knew this guy, and he needed somebody to come run his kennel and show dogs. And George looked at me and he says, you're ready. And I said, what do you mean? He said, you're ready to go on your own. And I said, really? I said, okay. no problem. He said, this guy needs you to run the kennel, which you know how to run a kennel as good as anybody. And he says, you know how to handle the dog as good as anybody. And he said, you know how to trim. He says, so go for it. So Vista, New York, I talked to this gentleman on the phone. And I said, listen, I says, I'll make my last weekend working for George Marianne Westchester weekend, which was always the first weekend of September. And so I drove up to Lewisboro, New York, which is Vista, New York. And I started laughing and drove in the driveway, and across the street was a bar called Johnny's. And I walked in the office, and this guy met me at the door, and we walked in, and I says, huh? I says, why don't you come with me? And he says, what? I says, why don't you come with me? And I opened up a door going into the back room, and I says, here's your boiler room. I says, I want to show you something. I said, this place caught on fire when I was just a kid. I said, my godfather, a gentleman called Chuck Crane, which the book The Biscuit Eater was written about, that was his childhood life story. And I said, Chuck Crane and my father were partners in this kennel. So I said, they decided to go over to Johnny's for lunch. I said, you know how that is? You go for one drink, you might have two, and it might have three, and somebody yells out the window, the kennel's on fire. And what happened was that they had put a bucket of tripe on one of the burners, left it on because they didn't think it would boil over. And you know what happens when grease catches? It just snapped and off it went. The man says, well, you know this kennel? I says, oh, yeah. I says, out back, there's a little house where Chuck used to live. I says, actually, Chuck used to live in this room. But I says, and then he made a little cabin out back on the back side of that. And I says, and on the right of it, I says, there used to be a garbage company. And he says, that's still there. And I says, there you go. I know the kennel. So I worked there for a while. You know, it was great. Rita, my wife, and I got married and went up, took over my mother's kennel for a while. And like a lot of people, you know, you love your mother to death. You just can't work with them, you know. So Rita and I packed up and left and went to Delaware. And we were there for many, many, many years, you know, working 24/7 together and had a great career. Just, you know, but I do have to say, there is so much. You and I can sit here and talk, and then things I go back as a back history. You know, Robert and Dad were my heroes. You know, they just. I always said about Bob being a man. You know, you look at him. You know, he was an old Marine, just boom. He just was a hardcore. His brother was meaner than he was, Gordon. And he's probably the meanest man I ever met in my life. He was just, you know, everybody thought Bob was tough and mean after he had his freaking Manhattans. Well, Gordon was meaner than Bob ever thought about being. But I always used to laugh. I says, Bob is what you want to be when you're growing up, and when you grow up, it's still you want to be him when you get older. He was just a great man. And my uncle worked for him he came out of the steel mills in Alabama, came north. He was going to work for Dad, Harry Lindbergh. And he went to work for Bob. My father said to Harry, he says, Bob's looking for a kennel manager. And he says, why don't you? He says, you'll make more money working with him than you will for me. So Harry went over, applied for Bob, was there until he died. I mean, well, he retired, but after Bob and Jane moved out, so did Harry. But he worked for him for, oh, shoot. You know, had to be 59, I guess it was, 59 until Bob and Jane retired. But, it was a close-knit family. We just don't realize how close. Steve Shaw, Howard Tyler. Howard Tyler bought me my first ice cream I mean, it was the, and there's, again, there's a gentleman that the, Janie always used to say, so she goes, I don't think there's anybody in the dog game as polite as Howard, you know, and it was the truth. He and his wife, or she was a school teacher, Howard's wife, and Howard just, he showed poodles, Old English, showed a lot of dogs, you know, I just, but those were his main two breeds that he showed, poodles and Old English. And back in those days, everybody carried Old English and poodles. They just did it all themselves. And Steve Shaw, I used to go to dog shows with Howard. It was incredible education growing up about dogs. It was something that you'll, at this dog game, you can't, you just can't grasp. You know, Rita would sit there and laugh as Dad would travel with us to a dog show, whether we go to Texas or whether we go to Oklahoma, and always had a box with a book of standards in between us. And sure enough, Dad and I'd start arguing about dogs. We would just argue about dogs. Reet would be sitting there going, she'd pull out the book and she says, well, you're both right. I says, but I'm more right than he is. And Dad would go, I ain't. But it was, we had a great time. We really did, you know, and Bob, and going to shows with Bob and Jane, and Bob would kick me in the butt, you know, David McCurley, Wayne Cavanaugh, and, but we had a really, really, really great, great time, you know, growing up.
Sounds
my
like
dear, it. Yeah, my dearest friends, Bobby Fischer, Michael Posserat, Elliot Weiss. I mean, you couldn't ask Bobby Fowler and Peter Green, but you couldn't ask for a better commodity than to learn from. We all taught each other. I mean, it was a great education. I mean, it's, I feel sorry for the guys that show dogs today. They don't have, not that they can't show dogs, but I don't think you get the education from all sitting around arguing about this and that. You know, I mean, I can remember going to Cleveland, the last show of the year, and we used to go down to the pier. We'd all have dinner. Winnie, who, God, I loved traveling with Winnie when I was a kid. I loved her. You know, you had Ramona and George Ward, George Rude, Dick Cooper, Dad. We all would just, it would be a great dinner. I mean, the whole god darn table was just full of us. The education that you got from listening to all them talk, you know, Ramona and Winnie. I mean, those were two intelligent people. You'd have Winnie Heckman buy you a dog any day of the week. Today, she would probably be one of the greatest dog judges in today's society. You know, she was when she was judging. I mean, she just, you'd say, Winnie, buy me a dog. No matter where, what, and when, she could just buy it and off you go. I was just so hurt when she passed, you know, and she used to take great care of me, you know. She used to take care of Bobby, you know. She'd say, God dang it, Bobby, you got to quit. Oh, yeah, okay. He'd sit there. But we had the education that came from this dog game. I feel so sorry for this generation that is in it today. Not that they're not an intelligent bunch of people, and not that they can't show dogs, and not that they can't trim them. It's... You know, the details that I learned when I was growing up all the way through this business was incredible. Yeah. Janie once said to me, I was in a huff about something. And Janie says, hey, you know, it is what it is. And she reached over and she grabbed me like this and she'd go, you're going to get more out of that if you treat them with honey instead of salt and vinegar. And I went, yeah, I know. And I always remembered that, you know, it's Janie always said, treat them with honey. You know, it's just sugar and spice and everything's nice. And that's, listen, everybody loved Janie. It's just what, I don't think there was anybody in the game that disrespected Janie Forsythe. And the education that she guided you, so many of us through, it's, but treat them with honey, sugar and spice and everything's nice is the way Janie always thought things should be done. Robert, on the other hand, you do it my way or I smack you. But Robert, he didn't care. You know, he did his job and he wanted his Manhattans or his slits after the god darn dog game. So it was great. You know, Wayne and Wayne, myself, David McCurley, you know, we all used to work at Hetty that had Pekingese. There was so many of us. Joanne Lynch, who had Basset Hounds, that we all worked for them. And I can remember that when I went on my own, you know, they don't give you everything you want. You know, they handed you a handful of breeds to go show. Mine happened to be Bouviers, Lhasas, Pointers, and English Cockers, I think. And might have had Labradors too. So I can remember at one of the shows, and Wayne said to me, all right, you've got to cover a dog for winners. No problem. Go in for winners. Then we got to go back in for the breed, and I don't think anything of it. I just do it. Go home. Next day, I have a phone call. And Mr. Brumby. Doug? Says, yes. Says, you crossed the line yesterday. And I says, what do you mean? He says, you were showing a couple of dogs that, or you were showing a dog that you weren't licensed for. I says, Mr. Brumby, I says, I didn't take anybody's dog that I didn't charge anybody any money. He says, you were showing dogs that you weren't licensed for. Then it dawned on me. It was Wayne's dog, English Setter, and Pointer, whatever the heck he had. I think it was an English Setter. I says, Mr. Brumby, I said, I can only tell you that I was covering a dog's friend. He had two dogs for winners, dog and a bitch. And I said, I just covered it for him. He said, you're not allowed to.
Wow. Not even covering dogs.
Like, not even covering dogs. I says, Mr. Brumby, I said, you know, I don't do anything to harm the AKC. I don't go against it, you know. But I have my own temperament back in those days. In fact, I had my own temperament most of my life. So I said, Mr. Brumby, I said, are you sure you're pursuing this? And he goes, yes, Doug. I said, no problem. He says, what do you mean, no problem? I said, no problem. I said, Mr. Brumby, you have a nice day. Got off the phone, mailed my license back into him. And I showed without a license for a short while. Elliot Moore was going for his license at the same time, or going on his own at the same time. He was the last all-around handler to be issued a license because Ricky had sued him, and AKC figured...
AKC.
Yeah, AK, Ricky Cashodian sued the American Kennel Club, and AKC was not going to fight him. They just decided, that's it. We'll do away with licenses. So, but when Elliot applied, they just sent back an all-around all-breed license. Wow. Elliot was the last all-breed licensed handler ever issued a license. And the minute he got it, there wasn't a license anymore. It was done. It just tear it apart. So, but, you know, the era that I came on my own with was a great era. I mean, you have Bonnie Threepaw, great dog woman, great set of hands. You had Mark Threefold. You had Elliot Moore, you know, Linda Moore. This is Woody Winnell, Kenny Murray, you know. I mean, there's a class all by itself.
Well, I got to meet you all when I was down there working for Bobby Stebbins. That's
sure
when I
you did.
Met all you guys. So.
Yeah. I mean, that's an error all within itself, you know. And none of us, I don't think, are showing dogs in today's society, you know. I mean, we're all retired. We're either judging or have another business. But I'll tell you a story. Bobby was a great friend. Bobby Stebbins was such a dear, great friend, you know, when he come out of NAM, and I knew him before he went to NAM through his father, Stebbs, and I knew Buddy, his brother, you know, I mean, in that era, I mean, we all knew each other. Everybody was a part of the family, part of the group. So I'm on the Florida circuit, and I'm all set up. Reitz with me, and I don't even know who I had working for me back in those days. I think it might have been a young man called Jeffrey. I'm not sure. But gentleman comes walking over to me, and he says, "Doug," he says, can you help this gentleman trim a dog? I don't think anything about it. And he says, "He needs help learning how to trim an Irish setter." And I said, "Sure." So I put the dog up on the table. I says, "Listen, this is the side I'm going to trim." So I started trimming it, and I put, I don't know how much time. It was quite a bit of time. And then I get carried away, and I start even working on the other side. And this gentleman that came over to ask me help this young man trim this dog disappeared. Off he went. And he finally came back, and he says, "You missed Irish setters." I says, "What?" I said, "This dog was, yeah." He says, "It's the breed's over with." And I says, "Whoa, thing about it was it's a beautiful Irish setter." And I started laughing because as I'm trimming away, I said, "Who was doing Irish setters today?" He says, "Your father." And I started laughing, and I said, "You know something? This dog could have won from the classes, in effect. I think that dog did win from the classes a couple of times that week. It did not make Mr. Murray happy whatsoever." And I laughed because Kenny kept saying he wasn't trimmed when he started this darn weekend, you know, and I'm like, but by the end of the weekend, he was completely trimmed. I mean, he was a beautiful dog. In fact, I think that dog went on and did some nice winning, actually. That was his first. That was that young man's first top-winning dog, if I remember correctly.
He was, yes.
Yeah, was he?
Yeah. In case you haven't known, I was that young man, guys.
Oh, brother! Yeah, it was you. It was but that's, we all helped each other. You know. We all helped each other like that in that era. You weren't afraid to go ask somebody. You know, like Bobby would say to you, "Oh, I know just the person that'll help you trim that dog. Choo! Come on." And off you go. And that was George's way. George loved teaching, and I loved teaching. My father loved teaching. Janie would teach you how to show a dog. She just thought it was the greatest thing in the world when she could twist bones, and she'd teach you why she was beating you in the ring. Your foot's off. You know, it was at the, we were at the garden one year, and I can remember it was Tommy Glassler, great hammer, one of the best all time, and he could make an Irish setter look like whatever he wanted to look like. But we were at the tri-setter specialty before the garden, over in the Statler, and I'm sitting there watching. I'm sitting on the crates because we've set up right there. And I'm sitting in Ted Eldridge was judging. George, I don't think George could show. But Ted was judging, and Ted's walking down the line. Janie's got her Irish setter cranked, and Glassford's, and he got his tongue sticking out like that, and he's making his maneuvers, and Janie's making sure the back is set up, and he just reached over to that front leg and pulled it out on Janie's. Ted got up to Tommy, looked at Tommy's, and I think Tommy had major back in those days, so, I mean, that's how Dick might have had a chance. I mean, that's, I mean, those, that was a competitive bunch of people in there.
Yeah.
You know? And whatever Irish setter Janie had, I even forget. And Ted looked down at Janie's foot front, and there it was, just like this. Tommy had made him go east and west, and Ted looked down at it like that and looked up at Janie and just kept walking. And then Janie looked down like that, and she, and whatever she said to Tommy, I mean, you know, it was, but it was great competition, laugh like crazy, you know, and, but nobody had the antics that Tommy Glassford did. If you could take a camera and watch Tommy show dogs, whether it be a bearded collie, a Manchester Terrier, a bloodhound, or, you know, he didn't show bloodhounds the old fashioned way, but Irish setters. I mean, anybody could learn off this gentleman on how he could form and make a dog look great. You know, I'm covering, it's between he and I out in, whatever the heck show it was, Pittsburgh, I guess it was, maybe, or Johnstown, that weekend. And he and I are in Best in Show. And he and I had been pulling jokes on each other, moving legs, doing whatever, when, and I forget who the heck was the judge. It might have been Louis Murr, somebody like that. But he pulled us out in the ring. And he says, "Do you realize you two have other people in this ring competing against you?" And I'm like going, "Yes, sir." Tommy goes, "Yes, sir." And he flat out said it. He says, "It's between you two." And whatever dog Tommy had and whatever dog I had, he said, "I want you two to go around." And I started to take off, and Tommy put his foot in between my two legs. I went flat down on my face, and Tommy kept going around like that. And Louie just looked at me and he said, "You're losing." And I mean, but you couldn't do that in today's society, you know. I mean, it's just, it was, I'll never forget it. I mean, Tommy and I played that game against each other all the time, and he won most of the time. And he was just a great handler, and he's a great, had great antics to him. He really was. But I miss camaraderie that everybody had.
I remember. You know?
It just was, yeah, you know, it was, you looked forward every weekend. You couldn't wait to go to a dog show to see your friends. You'd learn, you know, as much, I'd hate to say it, but, you know, as much partying as I used to do, or Bobby Fischer and I used to do, or Elliot or Michael, or as much partying we used to do, we learned more than this society will ever learn off each other. You know, probably the greatest all-around handler of all, trimmer, is probably Bobby Fischer. He could, from a poodle to a Manchester, I mean, to a Affenpinscher, to a wire fox terrier, to English setter, Irish setter, he could trim any animal that was walked into his, you know, kennel. You know, the gentleman that everybody, a lot of those people learned off, was a gentleman called Phil Prentice. I mean, he was, and he never, you never hear of the recognition that gentleman had I mean, it just, Phil was a talented, talented person that people just don't ever hear anybody talking about in the conversation. He was a great dog man, you know, could teach anybody about any breed and how to trim. He was just a great, great dog man, you know. There's just so many of an era that we all learned off of just by traveling in their trucks or having dinner with them or setting up at their crate. We all had to set up. There was nobody that worked out of trucks. Everybody set up underneath tents. So, you know, Bob and Jane, back in the day before they bought a camper, they set up underneath the tents, you know. Dad, Phil Prentice, we all set up underneath the tents. And then we all had dinner together, and we all, nobody ever did not get along. I mean, we all argued. Don't get me wrong. They all argued. They argued like cats and dogs. But where are we going to dinner tonight? And off they go. I don't see that in today's society. I think that's probably, I'm not saying that there isn't good dog men out there and dog women. I think there is, that's the camaraderie that this dog game doesn't have anymore. And the AKC won't let you associate with judges. And the judges need to learn. I mean, it isn't that the handlers need to learn, but we all need to learn from handlers. I mean, like, I'd love to go out to dinner with you and just sit there and get caught in a conversation. Say, Willie, what do you think about this? You know? And William, excuse me. And it's a society that's it's progress, I guess they call it. You know, they think it's a
really progress. I don't know. You know,
yeah, it's a strange way of showing progress.
It's not really a progress. I'm not.
You know, I just but all handlers and all breeders and all judges used to go out to dinner together. There was never a question about, you know, Jack LaFleur. You know, he was president of the American Kennel Club. Great guy. And Mr. Brumby, you know, Mr. Brumby was strict on what he, you know, he just wanted his rules followed. But he participated in conversations. I mean, he was an intelligent person too, you know. That's where the American Kennel Club went wrong. They should have contacted Mr. Brumby or Mr. LaFleur when he was still alive and say, hey guys, give us a little intellectual brains in here, you know. But they didn't.
Integrity seems to be in question too much now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's and you know, part of my fault is I haven't progressed on applying for more licensing or breeds, because I get my get myself stuck in my own little thoughts, and I say, so I push it along. I says, I don't need to, you know. And I enjoy just watching dogs. I can watch dogs all day long. It's just and from that era, you will, you know. I was talking with a gentleman the other day, and he said to me, he says, what do you think about today's society, Doug? And I said, I don't know. I said, I can't tell you much. I said, it's an odd society. It's the dog game is odd. And he goes, well, he said, I'm going to tell you something. They don't have any heroes. I said, boy, that's as classy a statement in this game as ever. You know, I grew up having heroes. I really did. George Ward. Oh, first time I ever met George Ward, he came east with his wife, Louise, showing poodles. I mean, it wasn't so much terriers. He was showing poodles. And all you heard about Dad was in Clippy. Ah, son of a gun's coming east. He's bringing goddamn terriers. Well, shoot, he shows up with a truckload of poodles, Louise's. And it isn't that he didn't win. He beat Annie and he beat Jane. Everybody had poodles back in those days. Bob's wife, Mary, that's what she bred. So Bob's big breed in those days was Shetland Poodles. And she was another good dog person, Mary was. And Bob had two children out of her. And, you know, it's just, but, you know, my father was partners with Bob, you know. So that's how you, you know, and then the state came in and was that down, you know, box sign kennels. Was it box sign kennels? I forget. Mail pack, whatever the heck it was. But the state came through, purchased the kennel. So Dad went and bought a kennel on his own, and Bob went and, moved in with Janie and divorced Mary. So there you go. And that was the life that was started in that direction. It became Bob and Jane that just overpowered the dog game. And I have to, and we all laughed, all records would have been broken. And nobody could have ever broke Janie's record if she decided to get in the car and go show one dog. Mr. Moses couldn't have broke that record. I mean, Janie probably would have had 400 best in shows. She would have just found one dog that she liked, whether it be the old boxer dog that she really admired, the old chow that was a great one, Brussels, that Mighty Man dog, holy jingles. I mean, that was as good as any Brussels. It really was a beautiful, beautiful animal. But if she had taken any one of those dogs and got in the car and said, goodbye, I'll come home when I'm going to finish showing, she'd have broken all records. Janie had the idea of making money. She had her shows that she went to, and that was it. You know, the only time she went out of the area was Chicago. Tar Heel. She went to Florida Circuit, I think, one time. But she went to Santa Barbara, I believe, one time that weekend. She never went back. She didn't like it, so she never went back. But Chicago was part of her routine. She went to Chicago, Tar Heel Circuit. And other than that, she just stayed north, and she went dog show after dog show after dog show, you know, and never once thought about putting a record on a dog. She would put records on dogs, and that's how I always approached the client. Janie taught me and said, don't ever say you're going to break a record with that dog. Always say to your client when they come to hire you and they show you your dog, I can put a beautiful record on that dog. You know, whether it be 5 best in shows or 10 best in shows or whatever. I can remember George would probably as nice a dog, great dog, was the Foxhound, Winslow.
Yeah.
He was an incredible animal. He was just incredible. But I laughed like crazy. George and I are traveling. He comes up to the kennel and we pack in the truck and off we go to New England. And he's sitting over there and he says, I want to tell you how many best in shows I got on this dog. And I says, okay. How many you got on this dog? 60. I says, what? 60. And I don't know if it was 60, it could have been 50. You know? I says, really? He goes, and he's, you know how George would pop out his chest like, and he goes, yeah. And he says, God dang, George, that's incredible. So off we go to the show. And all weekend, we have a great time. I mean, we really do. And I think it was up on the fly circuit, you know. And we're up there. So on the way home, and I forget. I think I caught a couple of best in shows on whatever I was showing. But not one dog, but two dogs. So on the way home, and I says, George, I said, you caught 60 best in shows or 50 best in shows? And he goes, yep. On one dog? He says, yep. Well, I says, I put 50 best in shows on 10 dogs. And he looked at me and he goes, what? I says, every one of my dogs in my truck have a best in show on it, George. And he started to laugh like crazy. He goes, you got me. He says, that's Janie taught. But we just, you know, George and I had great times. You know, he was such a mentor and as good as gun dog, man. This game's everything, you know. Really, really a great gun dog, man. And I don't know. I mean, you have, you know, through the years, you've seen people that are just of quality. You know, Kelly Fitzgerald, such an incredible groomer on her sporting dogs. She is really, really an incredible groomer. You have Robin and Laurel that are just great dog men. I mean, people, not men, but great dog women, you know. And you can go right down the list. I mean, I guess in the heroes in today's society, you know, you have Bill McFadden. You have to look up to Bill McFadden. I mean, he is such an incredible, incredible person to like, and they're an intelligent couple. They really are. I don't think there's a dog that doesn't like them that they show. And there isn't a dog that they show that they can't trim, you know? So today's society, you have to say, hey, you know, Dougie out in Wisconsin, you know, he doesn't show much anymore. But again, he's an incredible dog person. Mike and Linda Pitts. There's not many out there. Willie, you. I mean, it's when you're in your heyday, if you're coming back to showing dogs, there isn't a dog you can't trim. You know, there's not many in this era that I respect. Let's put it that way. Those, you know, Kathy Lorenzen on her Springers. She trims them, she breeds them. She's an incredible person when it comes to that breeding and trimming. There's just a handful of people that you want to respect in today's dog society.
So what would you do? What advice would you give a new handler then? And somebody that wants to do this for a living, what advice would you give them, Doug?
Quit. Find another job.
They wanted to show dogs. What would you tell them?
Oh, shoot. You know, I have my, and he's like my stepson, Christopher, or Christian, and his real name is Christian Berg. But he, you know, when he left me and went on his own, he went on his own with Kelly, I said to him, I said, make sure this is a business that you really want to do. The expense is incredible. You can't just buy a van to go to a dog show these days. It has to have a generator. It has to have an air conditioning. Today's society is waiting for a lawsuit if you lose a dog. You know, if a dog dies on you because of you did not have an air conditioner or you didn't have a generator on there to keep it cool. You know, these big motor homes I have a 40-foot, you know, $400,000+ motor home. All these dog people have these rigs that are 45 feet that I believe they live in. Dogs don't get a time to rest, and people don't get time to rest. I think in today's society, my only recommendation is that you have to decide, do you want to hit a 200 dog shows a year? Or do you want to give your dog time and relaxation So you go to 145 dog shows. You go home, you spend 3 days at home, the dog gets to traveling, it hangs out in his paddock, gets to run on a trotter. You know, 1 year I was financially strapped. So I went to everything, every show that I possibly could. I went to Texas, I went to Oklahoma. Now, I think it was basically 165 or 170 dog shows I hit that year, counting specialties. And Janie sat there and argued with me. She says, it's impossible to do. I said, I don't know. I paid off all my bills. I said, it's really as possible to do.
Dragging you everywhere, yeah.
You know, I went everywhere and every place. I mean, nighttime specialties. I did it all. And, but I believe today you can hit over 200 dog shows.
That's crazy. It's crazy, yeah.
You know, but you have to, a handler has to decide whether, does that come first, hitting 200 dog shows? But does the dog's welfare and your welfare?
Yeah.
I mean, those are two important things in your life. More arguments come because you're tired. You're wore out. The dog's wore out. Your dog isn't performing in the ring the way it should be. And so you beat him. I have a good friend that I beat not long ago. I don't know where I put him. Third. And he was upset. I mean, he literally was upset. And I said, come on, give me a break. I said, shoot. I said, you were dragging him on around the goddamn ring. I said, you were lucky that you got a ribbon. And he just didn't understand it, you know. Dogs have to perform. Heck, I was getting beaten to breed because my dog didn't perform. You know, Pete knew. Another gentleman of this dog game gives me best in show. I think it was Tuxedo Park, Westchester weekend. Then we go over to Somerset. Go to Somerset. Gave me best in show on a Bouvier, first night out, first time. Go to Somerset. You know, I forget what I did that day. I know I did not lose the breed. And there was a really competitive Bouvier out that Bill would know, called Barney, Maurice Heisel, bred him. And he was, God, we all tried to buy him. He was a beautiful dog. Sure enough, come Westchester weekend, I got Pete doing the breed. Nope. No problem. And I'm thinking to myself, no problem. I get in that ring, and this dog is lagging. He just wasn't giving me what I needed to do. Pete beat me that quick. Just gave me best in show 2 days prior, right? Lang used to do the same thing, you know, and it was respected judges. Lang Scarter, I mean, he was a respected judge, you know. You look at our society. I mean, one of the great, and I have to say, probably one of the great dog men and a great teacher is Clay Cody. I mean, he is an incredible teacher. You know, he taught a lot of young men on how to train dogs and show dogs, and intelligent. He's a great judge now. I mean, he really is a good judge. You know, you'd have him buy you a terrier any day of the week.
Oh, God, yeah, for sure.
You know.
I have one last question for you, Doug. What advice would you give a 20-year-old Doug Holloway?
Holy jingles. That's rough, William. Start off with... God, most people don't know my life, you know, or some of them probably think they know what I was capable of back in those days, and I was a little bit more of a ruffian than most people realized, you know. I would probably say not drink, You know, God dang, Willie. to say the things I shouldn't do would probably say, okay, you know, I probably drank a little bit excessive, probably did a little bit more things excessive that I shouldn't have done. I probably brawled more times than probably should have. George always thought that was the greatest thing in the world. He had no problem, and same with Forsythe, had no problem in getting an argument when I was standing next to him, because I would just jump in the middle of it and say, okay, it's time to take it over. But, you know, I would probably say I probably shouldn't get into the brawling and probably put down whatever extra alcohol and whatever other partying things that I used to do. I would probably slow down on those. Yeah.
Sorry about that question, Dave.
Huh?
Sorry about that question. I kind of caught you there.
Well, I did it more than most. You know, I sat in an issue that somebody had caused me during my life. So I had to, I had tremendous headaches at one time. So caused from this incident that I had. So I'm sitting in a doctor's office and we're talking, like you and I, just sitting here talking. And he said, I see you sort of left alcohol off the table. I says, well, no need to talk about it. He says, yes, we do. He says, well, what do you have, a beer a day? I says, oh, yeah. He says, you have two beers a day. I said, oh, yeah. He says, you have a six-pack a day. I said, oh, yeah. Looked at me and he says, you have two six-packs a day. I said, oh, yes. He finally ended up saying a case a day. I says, oh, yes, I have a case a day. and he says, and do you have other issues along with this? I says, oh, yes. So, you know, back in those days, it was, you never thought about it. It just, you know, just, I mean, in today's society, I don't think anybody could drink and get away with it in today's society. We all could drink.
Yeah, you know? not perform anyway. And
you know, and I just, we all could drink. Forsythe would always say one can of beer every 10 miles. And that was his, one can of beer every 10 miles. That was Bob's thought, you know. And our whole society, and that whole group that I was talking about, we indulged more than most people would ever imagine, you know. And it was just a common thing. And you functioned. And I don't think Rita, to this day, she says, I couldn't have told you he was drunk. But then she sat there and watched me drink, and she go, ooh, Charlie. I mean, Willie, I'm probably, my mind's wandering, but I, you know, if I ever thought about all the things that you could talk about the dog game, I just like talking about the dog game. It's not so much me or.
Well, you can tell. You can tell. We can go on for hours.
Yeah. You know, that's what I got upset at George.
We'll have to pick an era and do this again.
Huh?
We'll have to pick an era and do this again.
Oh, believe me. I mean, it was the greatest education that anybody can ever have is if one of your mentors, Bobby Fischer is one of my mentors, Elliot Weiss is one of my mentors, Georgie Alston is one of my mentors, Michael Posrat, Peter Green. Underneath that grooming tent, sitting on top of a tabletop and just talking and watching,
yeah,
and learning how to groom the right way. Jimmy Mitchell and I talked about when this pandemic started. He said, what are these guys are going to do if they can't blow dry? You know, the worst thing in the world is seeing a golden retriever blow dried. I mean, I just, there's no need to. I mean, it really is no need to. I mean, I think Elliot and Linda more, probably the best golden retrievers, and Billy Trainer, I think were probably the best golden retriever trimmers that this country's ever seen. They knew how to do it, you know. They kept the guard hairs all in place. But I said to Jimmy, I said, they're going to learn why dogs should be trimmed the correct way. Because if they're trimmed the correct way for their function, they won't need a blow dryer.
True.
You know? And Jimmy says, ain't none of them are going to adapt to that. You know, I looked at a great, I mean, she's another great dog person, is Mariffy. Whoa. I mean, that woman is, she's intense, but, you know, she's a great dog woman. I mean, she could adapt. Yep. You know, she used the blow dryer. She used whatever she had to do, but she could adapt to any kind of society of the way dogs had to be shown. I mean, she was, you know, was a classic, you know. I don't think in my era, I think all the dog people that literally are in my era were all really, really, really good dog people. Yeah. You know, like include you.
Thanks, Doug.
I mean, I never, like I said, I would rather talk about the era and the dog people in the dog game than about me, you know.
Well, let's plan this and do this again, and we'll pick an era, like I said, and we'll go again.
But, oh, I would love that. You know, you guide me because I wander. I go back and forth.
Yeah.
You know, you guide me in the direction you want me to go. And let me tell you, like I really love the dog game. It's something that that a true dog person has to have that passion for. And I do have passion for the dog.
Oh, you can tell. You can tell. You know?
And like I said, you know, today's heroes, I wish there was a lot more so people could learn from that society. Mm-hmm. You know.
Well, we can give them something back with these interviews so they can at least hear all you guys talk.
Oh, it's great, you know. You should probably, one of my dearest friends, you probably should give him a call, is Jimmy Mitchell. I mean, he and I grew up in this game together, and God dang, he's got so much intelligence to talk about, you know. Well, and Desi, have you called Desi?
They're all on the list, Doug. They're all on the list.
Yeah, you know, if you can get Desi talking about his uncles and his father, holy jingles! My father and Desi's uncles and his father all came over on the same boat, you know, and then they were in the prisoner of war camps. I mean, it was like, hello, you know, it's this, yeah, you pick an error and go back. But if you can get Desi talking about times, holy jingles, that man can remember more things than.
And now you're like a trailer for the next couple interviews.
Oh. All right. Listen, William, I love you.
Love you too, Doug.
Okay, and
you reached my love too, and thanks again for giving me all this time. And let's do it again. Let's pick an error, and we'll do it again.
No, just give me a buzz when you want me. Happy. I'm happy to. I really am. You can get me going and talking, and it's just
all day, I'm sure.
Yeah, and that's the best thing about it. You know, it's great talking about the history. And which makes me feel good, you know. And like I said, I love you, Willie. Thank you for ever much having me. Okay.
It's good. Good to see you, Dougie.
All righty. Great. Bye.
Well, thank you, Dougie. That was enjoyable. There was no question that it was going to be. If you like what we're doing here, make sure you press the like, share, and subscribe button. And if you want to get a hold of me, you can get a hold of me at dogshowtips@gmail.com. If you want to see some of my videos, go to leadingedgedogshowacademy.com. You'll see my grooming videos. And if you just want to find out what's happening at Will's World, go to willalexander.net. Until next time.